Hello. Yes, we have a lot of people resonating with everything you're saying, Sarah. So I want to make sure, and also sharing what their own child's executive function difficulties look like in their home. So this is going to be rapid fire. Here we go, just so that everybody gets a chance. And then we have some questions. So Ellie is saying that it is difficult for her child to stick with projects that take a longer time span. Karen was chiming in, talking about her son who is going into 8th grade, saying that it used to be a challenge for him to remember to bring home materials and textbooks, but now that they've switched schools, it's now knowing it's that time factor, knowing how long an assignment will take. Part of that is developmental, she's saying, but when he's planning and he's doing his work, it's kind of caught up with him. And that like something takes longer than he actually expected. So we definitely have seen that. We have Christine checking in from Colorado, but she is with us in our Chino Center doing her daughter's doing an intensive with us. So she's visiting. Welcome. And she's saying her daughter's biggest challenges are remembering where she puts items, organization of her desk, her bedroom, and knowing how to get started and being ready on time. We have, let's see, Julie checking in. She has a highly gifted 6-year-old. Organizing and keeping things tidy is what they struggle with. Let's see. And we have Veronica checking in from California. Their challenge is homework. Leslie saying one of their biggest challenges is memory. So we definitely understand that. We have Lydia saying virtual school was a complete failure for her ADHD kids. It made them miserable. It made them depressed, probably because they couldn't feel successful. They didn't have the tools to be successful at that. And she just adds, "Thank you so much for explaining these skill sets," because she always knew it was a thing and didn't know the name for it. It's definitely an issue for her family. A lot of parents saying, "You're describing my kid. I get it. This is what we're dealing with." Alicia saying, "We always say my daughter has no concept of time. We tried setting alarms with labels for her, but unfortunately has no positive results." So I think that the strategy that you explained with, using the wall clock, and that analog clock, that's something I know I did when I was a teacher. Many, many years ago, we never had digital because I taught 2nd grade, and just the concept of time
That's
for
right.
little guys. I mean, that's just an essential skill. Absolutely. Let's see. I want to make sure I get to. And Sonia is saying they're from Southern California. A 10-year-old struggles with time and remembering instruction. So absolutely, and we've seen that. So a lot of themes regarding memory and time orientation. So definitely, it's resonating with their audience. And Nell saying starting, so initiation. I know we hear a lot from parents just initiating, approaching the task, just getting started with step one is the hardest thing for a lot of kids. And Gabriella saying executive function challenges have just shown up strongly in 4th grade, new to this and researching like crazy. Yeah, and would you say that is a lot of times where you start to see the breakdown occurring for students with executive function challenges around 4th grade, 10 years old, 9, around there?
So interestingly, it changes, and that's a good place to start to maybe answer a number of those questions. And this is something that I think is really fascinating. So typically in the younger grades, that kindergarten for 2nd grade, the executive function challenges often present as a high level of impulsivity. So the child who has a hard time sitting in whole group instruction where they can't do independent class assignments and be able to finish them, et cetera. And then in 4th grade, it starts to show up as organization of being able to get homework done and get it back to school. And then as you enter the higher grades, it's being able to transition, remembering to turn homework in, remembering to bring homework home, remembering all those things. And then high school, a lot like what someone else said, is now it's managing these long-term projects. What's fascinating is that when we look at the developmental course of executive function, it's not academic related that makes it harder, because we expect academics to get more difficult. I mean, you know, you expect the learning to become more challenging as you go from elementary to middle and high school. But remember that executive function is all about that forethought, right? So I'm holding up my thought bubble again. And the distance between where you are in a moment in time and how far into the future that you can see is something called the spatial temporal window. So it's how far you can see in space and time. So if I'm in my classroom, I can see where I'm going. I'm going to go there and get my whiteboard, and I'm going to go there and I'm going to get my math manipulatives, and I'm going to come back to my desk. As you get older, you have to picture, okay, I'm at my locker, but I need to go down the hall, up the stairs, and down another hallway, and I need to be doing something in science. And then as you get in high school, okay, here's the project, but I have to be doing this group work with my friends. Then I have to be doing that PowerPoint, and the final isn't due from 2 weeks from now. So that distance between where you are and how far into the future you can see, sometimes they call it the time horizon, but I find it's a little easier to think about it as a spatial temporal window, how far into space and time you can see. Students with ADHD, we know that they demonstrate, it's been proven with this, a 3 to 3.5 year delay in that skill. And so they just cannot see far into the future. And that's why if something's due 3 weeks from now, they're like, whatever, it's due 3 weeks from now. And it's literally not until 12 hours before it's due that they're suddenly seeing it and feeling it and going, oh my gosh, now it's due 12 hours from now. And they're kind of freaking out. So the reason why I bring that up is that developmentally, that's why we see all of a sudden, it's not just put on your sneakers, it's put your sneakers in your bag. Remember to take your bag to school. Remember to take out your sneakers for gym. Remember to put them in your bag and remember to bring them back home. You have to hold on to that planning over greater distances of space and time. And that's what makes executive function skills harder over longer grades and distances. However, the really key thing that if I give you any little piece of advice today is, remember, I keep holding up my thought bubble. Executive function is all about starting with a mental visual image of what it is that it's going to look like. So let me answer the question about long-term projects. Typically what happens is kids get a project and we say, break the project into smaller parts. And what kids do with the support of a teacher or parent or not, they may write the steps on a calendar. Right? So it might say, make the PowerPoint, write the introductory paragraph, write the essay, edit, revise. I don't know. But the thing is, if a child comes home on Monday night and they don't really feel like writing that introductory paragraph, then they just move on to the next day and the next day. I've never met a child who would erase something on a calendar and move that step. So instead, we want to make it visible. A really cool tool is get yourself a big 8x11 or 11x17 calendar. When a student has a step of a project, make a little sketch of it. If the student needs to write a paragraph, sketch a little paragraph on a sticky note. If the child needs to study flashcards, make a little sketch of flashcards on a sticky note. If a child needs to find a map for a poster, make a little sketch of a map on a sticky note. Then spread the sticky notes out on the calendar so that if you come home on Tuesday night and you were supposed to find that map of Spain, because that's what's on the sticky note, but oh my goodness, you had a soccer game that went late and you have a lot of other homework, then you can just take that sticky note and move it to Wednesday. If you don't do the steps on Wednesday, take those sticky notes and move them to Thursday. What happens is the child will visually see the impact of procrastination. They will see those steps piling up. So remember, executive function is visual. Make it visual, and executive function is about a movement. How am I moving? Move those steps, be able to physically manage them. That can really help a lot. Another question I want to answer was, and I hear this all the time, oh my gosh, my kid just can't estimate time, right? You say to them, how long do you think that will take? The problem is that most kids do exactly that. They estimate time and they tend to do it based on emotion. Well, I feel like it'll take me 10 minutes. Oh, I don't know. It'll just be 5 minutes. You know, like they just kind of go based on like what they want it to be or something. So I encourage you to change your language. Don't ask your child to estimate time. Ask them to calculate time. And we have a formula for this, but there's an easy way to do this. You and I, what we do is we calculate time. So if you are going to, for example, I live in Boston, or I live in Sudbury, which is about 35 minutes outside of Boston. So as a matter of fact, I actually have a dentist appointment in Boston tomorrow. However, even though it's 35 minutes away, I'm going to give myself an hour and 20 minutes because I have calculated it is during rush hour. I have calculated that I need to park my car on a major busy road, and there's a pretty darn good chance I'm not going to readily find a metered spot. If I do, excellent. How great for me. And I will find time to get a cup of coffee and read on my iPad if I have an extra half hour. But I'm suspecting it could take me a half hour to find a parking spot. So the point being, what you and I do is we calculate a window of time, what we know to be the minimum of time, what's probably going to be the maximum, and where it might fall somewhere in between. How do you teach a child to calculate time? Well, what you want them to do is you want them to calculate the volume of work that they have by the difficulty. So instead of saying, how long do you think that math will take you? You want to look specifically at the volume of math problems. There are 10 math problems. And then ask the child, do you think those are easy, medium, or hard? Now, maybe kids will under or overestimate. I don't know. It's very individualized depending upon the child. Let's say they say they're medium. I usually call easy, medium, hard a 1, 2, or 3. So if medium is a 2 and there are 10 problems, 10 times 2 is 20. If each problem takes you 2 minutes, it's a 20-minute task. So really, we call this kind of like the minute estimate or the minute gauge tool. So if I have to do a poster and I need to print 3 pictures, and I think that might be hard to kind of get the picture and print the picture, and let's say it's 5 minutes a picture and there's 3 pictures, 5 times 3 is 15, I'm going to calculate 15 minutes. If your child needs to clean their bedroom and there's shirts on the floor and they're kind of throwing this, you know, fit over cleaning their bedroom, I will use the same thing. I will calculate, boy, I see 10 shirts. A second a shirt, that's a 10-second task. Boy, you need to hang up the towels in the bathroom. A second a towel, that's a 2-second task. I really love to give the volume and attach an amount and calculate it. So you have 10 spelling words. Those are easy words for you. If each one takes you 1 minute, that's a 10-minute task. If it takes you 2 minutes, it's a 20-minute task. If you calculate it like that, ironically, it's almost never inaccurate. It's almost accurate estimation every single time. But we find it helps kids to be more realistic about it. So if a child needs to read the chapter, I'll say, okay, how many pages are in that chapter? 10 pages. Easy, medium, or hard reading? Well, it's my history. It's hard. Okay, if it's 3 minutes a page and there's 10 pages of reading, guaranteed at a minimum, that's 30 minutes of reading. That's one of the best ways you can just be factually realistic about calculating a volume of time. And I really encourage you to try that. And that makes a big difference.
And taking that time to do that with your child, it's helping them be aware of time. And, yes. And it's, again, it's something we expect everybody to be aware of, but we don't really teach it. And so I think that's just a great way to tap on that nail all the time to build their awareness and orientation in time.
Yep, absolutely.
So great. This is so helpful. I want to make sure. I mean, we do have a lot of parents. We're going to try to get to as many of them as we can during this time. So Ellie, kind of switching gears. She's saying her child has difficulty attending to things that are boring because she has a twice exceptional son, but also self-regulation. So she would especially love Sarah's thoughts on number 2, how executive function skills impact emotional regulation and what parents can do to address them.
Sure. So it has a huge impact. And what we know is that as anxiety goes up or as emotional dysregulation goes up, working memory goes down. Now, working memory is this mental thought bubble that I'm talking about. It's that ability to hold in mind what something looks like and what the plan is. So if you're having a lot of negative thoughts and or you're ruminating about something or you're upset about something, remember that anxiety, that emotional upset is going up. It essentially, that lower emotional center of the brain will hijack, if you will, the frontal lobe, which means that the child may not be able to access this or may not be able to actually kind of visualize and break down and plan information. It's almost like this just kind of fades away and they kind of become stuck in that anxious moment, if you will. So there's a couple of things to know about that. One is that when we have students who are exhibiting kind of high anxiety, on the one hand, what we want to do, and by the way, I just cannot encourage you enough. The number one authority on the relationship between emotional regulation and executive function is Jessica Minahan. And there's an amazing, amazing article called Helping Anxious Students Move Forward. I'll say that again. It's called Helping Anxious Students Move Forward by Jessica Minahan. That article won the 2019 Article of the Year Award by the American Psychological Association. It's an outstanding article. But part of it is that this, we definitely want to empathize with a child who's feeling anxious and kind of validate their anxious feelings. But also recognize that when they're really sitting there and they're ruminating about all of those negative thoughts, that it's a bit hard for them to sort of get to this. And typically, Jessica really will say, one of the things that we do is we tend to give kids a break. Well, be cautious about what the break is, because part of the problem is you can do a break where maybe you're coloring or you're swinging or you're doing some sensory break. But the thing about it is that you can still be thinking those negative thoughts. One of the best things that you can do to a certain extent is a little bit of the power of distraction, where we want them to be doing something else that's going to engage their cognition on something unrelated to what's upsetting them so that they can shift those thoughts to that and regain some of that working memory. So one of my favorite strategies is certainly to validate, but then to really sort of shift and to try to talk about something that is related to that topic. And then I like to really work at giving the student the visual of what it can look like, because I find if I give them that visual, they don't have to pull it up in their own working memory. And oftentimes it's less overwhelming than they initially anticipated it to be. So for example, if you have a student who's really getting overwhelmed by writing and they just can't get started writing those sentences for those spelling words and they're starting to have a tantrum and they're getting all upset, I might, instead of just saying, oh, okay, let's take a break, I might give them another cognitive activity to do that they might like, whether it's a word search or something like that. And then you can sort of say to them, so, oh, we're looking at the word search. Gee, one of your spelling words is this. And maybe you get the sentence started and just ask them to finish it. Because if you get them started, what happens is you re-access that cognition and that working memory, and some of that emotional upset disappears. Plus, they begin to realize it's just not as bad as I thought. And thank you so much to the Stoll Learning Center for posting the link to that article. It's excellent. Definitely check out some of those strategies. I think you'll find it to be very helpful for your students. And then there was another question and, oh, the boring activities. Yep. I find this to be one of the biggest problems is that when students find tasks to be boring or annoying or frustrating, that's one of the number one places that they're going to procrastinate and they're going to kind of push back and they're going to resist doing. The reality is we all have to be tolerating the boring moment. So I have two things that I think are actually important. Number one, there is this amazing list of the top 10 predictors of college success. Ironically, not one of the things on the list is academic. The number one predictor of college success, by the way, is the ability to manage your own sleep hygiene. You have to be able to get to bed, wake up with an alarm and on your own and get the sleep that you need. Sometimes kids go off to college and they aren't doing that skill so effectively. But one of the, I believe it's like number eight, is that you need to have a job before you go to school. And having workability is a very, very important executive skill, because the ability to do work, to be able to set the table, to be able to sweep the back deck, to be able to take out the trash, is a big executive skill, because you have to know, well, what does successful completion of that work look like? What steps do I need to take in sequence to carry out that work? How do I know that I've done the job well? And how do I complete it and tolerate just a boring work activity? Because we all have to tolerate boring work activities. So right back with there with the job talk that I talked about earlier, where we say to kids, okay, be a toothbrusher, be a bag packer. Two quick strategies. Number one, I think a cool tool is create a help wanted bulletin board in your house. Literally put up the cork board and have jobs for hire. Make sure if you put a job for hire, you use job talk. Hire a sweeper, hire a pooper scooper for the dog, hire a raker, hire a driveway cleaner, hire a car washer. Always put that on the end of it. And identify what the job is. You can offer money for it. You could offer points, stars. If you have little kids, hire a box squisher, hire a towel folder, a sock sorter. You can do all sorts of things. But here's the reason why. We want kids to learn to get a job, start a job, and complete a job. That's part one. Part two, all of us do boring jobs. And one of the ways that we do boring jobs is we often associate it with something that's a little less boring. Maybe you watch Netflix while you're folding the clothes. Maybe you have music on in the background. So when kids have to really tolerate a super boring task, I often try to talk with them about two things. Either A, how do we make it less boring? Can we pair it with music? Can we pair it with drawing, something like that? And or I don't start with a boring task. I start with the forethought. What is the thing that you're looking forward to doing? I want to play Roblox. I want to go outside and skateboard. I want to play with the dog. Okay. So what do we need to do to get through this task so that you can go play with the dog? And I'm really constantly focusing on the benefit to them of tolerating the boring task. And I find when you start with the forethought, that's better than just saying, okay, get it done, and then you can play with the dog. It's just a funny shift. Say to them, oh, you're thinking about playing with the dog? What do we need to do? Oh, you really want to get to the dog? What could we do to make this less boring? Just that forethought tends to close that temporal spatial window a little bit. So that's helpful.
And it lets our brain anticipate something, which increases our mood, gives us a little dopamine boost.
Yes, absolutely. Couldn't have said it better.
That's so great. We have so many so many questions, and I wanted to just make sure that we hit on a lot of our questions are related to some of the things that you've already discussed. And so I just wanted to make sure that, because there's a lot of different challenges that parents are facing with their kiddos. And so really just quick advice for some of our parents. Mara is asking, I've heard suggestions that when a child has homework in multiple subjects, that they should lay it all out in stations at the table and spend 5 minutes or so in a subject and then rotate to the next subject to prevent boredom. What do you think of that strategy?
I think that that's really individualized. And here's the reason why. Some students have the ability to shift cognitive set. So if I'm working through calculus, albeit I find it boring, and I can do that for 5 minutes, and then I can shift my brain and focus on history for 5 minutes, then I have to be able to come back and re-engage my brain to do calculus. Some students are really good at that. There are other students that if they're in the set of, okay, what are the steps and procedures to carry out this particular calculus problem? and then they shift their attention to something new, it's like they have to start at square number one. That new information serves as interference for their cognitive train of thought. So I think the answer is it really depends upon the student. But what I do like is I do find it's very helpful to actually lay out homework for students and really help them start with what we call the done goal. So I'm always starting with, okay, if you spent a half hour on homework and you were all done, what does done actually look like? I've done 10 problems. I've done 3 problem sets. I've read 4 pages. And be very specific. You know, specificity is a superpower. Because what I find is that a lot of times we say to kids, go do your homework. What do you have for homework? And we're talking about it. And kids will say, I have English. I have math. I have history. And their immediate sense is, oh, it's going to take me hours. And they're overwhelmed by it. If instead we say, if you spent an hour doing math, you know, if you spent, you know, 10 minutes doing history, at the end of 10 minutes, what does done with history look like? And the kid goes, oh, well, I read a paragraph and answered 2 questions. Then a lot of times they go, oh, it's just not as much as I thought. You know, they've built it up to be so much more than it really is. And so I find that to be helpful. So, you know, again, what I would say in just broadly answering that question, I think it really depends upon your child.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's okay to experiment with your child. I mean, try it out and see, but dialogue together. How did that feel to you doing a little bit and moving to another subject? And if they say, oh my gosh, I was able to concentrate so much better. Perfect. If they say, oh, I hated having to switch. Okay, well, that's probably not going to work, or it's not enough time on each one. But that dialogue, I mean, that's what our executive function, that's what our executive function does as we try things out and determine the best way for ourselves.
You know, you just said something triggered something for me when you said, oh, we try things out for ourselves. There's another new book on the market that I think is really fantastic. I apologize that I don't know the author's name off the top of my head. They originally wrote a book called Unstuck and On Target. And it was a book about executive function and social regulation, a little bit targeted towards students on autism spectrum disorder, but not exclusively for that. And it was really about developing cognitive flexibility. But they've just put out a second book called Unstuck and Untarget to Build Executive Function Skills. Mm-hmm. And wow, is it outstanding. I mean, it's really terrific. I encourage you to check out that new book because it really prepares kids to be cognitively flexible and to anticipate a plan A and a plan B. Because when you and I have that mental forethought where we're anticipating, we're always anticipating, okay, well, we visualize, all right, I'm going to go and I'm going to manage the laundry and I'm going to walk the dog and I'm going to, you know, have dinner. And then all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, what if I take out the hamburger and it's too late? There's no way it's going to thaw. Well, if it's not going to thaw, then plan B, I guess we'll just do chicken leftover from last night and I'll turn it into burrito bowls, you know, whatever it is. You're constantly visualizing a plan A and a plan B. A lot of our kids, some of them aren't even getting the plan A. And so one thing I really love is I think this book does a really nice job of helping students naturally anticipate plan B thinking. And I'd encourage you to check it out.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much. We need to let Sarah go. I really want to see her all day. And I know all of you do too. Because this is a discussion that, you know, is so important. And I just encourage you, parents and teachers, you can go back to this over and over and over. Sarah has given you a ton of great resources, which we've put in the chat for you.
Yes, thank you.
So I just want to thank you so much. Lauren, if people didn't get their questions answered, give us a little guidance here about what they can do.
So absolutely. I mean, same as what Jill said, we have a private Facebook group, Mom Squad, where parents are welcome to join. You just need to search Facebook groups or go to our Facebook page and search for SLC Mom Squad. That's a community of parents with kids and teens with learning attention challenges. I posted guides, and one of the guides is on executive function. I'm going to repost this episode. I'm going to also independently post a lot of the resources that Sarah mentioned in today's show in Mom Squad, so you can access that, and you don't have to wade through all the comments to find all those really valuable resources. So look out for that in Mom Squad.